This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. We have a multitude of insurance needs. And you need to have the pros that care about you, Take care of those insurance needs because they care about you. They'll make sure you're insured and also do everything they can to save you money. It's customer service number one at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right. Purdue's been in a tough spot, but again, every game for them is one of those Super Bowl moments where you get out there and say, okay, this will be the day we make our statement. Well, they went to Ohio State. They didn't make any statement. They lost 45-0. But they had the game with Illinois. They had the 40-point second half. They got the game to overtime. Didn't win. And I think, was that the one where he said they went for two? Right? Either that or Northwestern one, because that went to overtime, too.
I think it was the first one. It was the Illinois game.
Yeah. I agree with going for two there. I don't blame them. Let's win it here. I'm to be honest with you, I'm all for that. You know what? What the heck? You know, you can play it a couple different ways. But I agree with him going for two there. What's interesting about... what is interesting about what they did at Purdue, and I'm not going to in any way, shape, or form judge Ryan Walters as a head coach. That's not my point here, okay? At all. Is that when you look at the history of Purdue football, they've always had their greatest success when they've had an offensive-minded coach. And so I was a bit surprised when he was hired, not because of the quality of the man, not the fact that the quality of defensive coordinator he was at Illinois. No, none of that. I'm talking about the history of the program. You go all the way back into the 60s, Bob Greasy. Then Mike Phipps, Leroy Keyes. These are all offensive players. Now I realize there are some defensive players that have played well. I mean, George Karloftis, for example, is playing very well for the Kansas City Chiefs on the defensive side of the ball. But that's when they've had their success. Mike Phipps, I believe, beat Notre Dame 3 years in a row as a starting quarterback. And again, because he was the quarterback. And then you fast forward to that, and Joe Tiller comes in. And when you sit there... and look at their success. I mean, and Tiller changed the Big Ten. If there's a single person that changed the Big Ten stylistically, it was Joe Tiller. And I don't care who the quarterback was, with the one that, above all, is Drew Brees. But again, offense, offense, offense. And then after Joe Tiller went, they kind of went a little um, went through that transition period. They got Jeff Fromm in there. What does Jeff Fromm coach? Offense. And Fromm's a really terrific offensive mind. Really terrific offensive mind. And when you sit there and look at when they've been successful, that's the kind of coach they've had. That's why I was surprised. And who knows how Saturday's going to turn out? I don't know. I go into every game with a blank slate. But I'm saying in the history of their program, what's worked? It's always been the offensive coach where it's worked. And again, Ryan Walters is young, excellent defensive mind, did a great job in Illinois. There's a lot of things that he has that are very appealing to any athletic director. But you also have a program that has a history of when it's successful and when it's not. And that's why I sat back and went, I don't know.
Well, you also have to assume that Indiana's one-year success this year doesn't help his job security right now either.
Well, what Cignetti is doing at Indiana doesn't help anybody's job security.
Well, that's true.
I'm talking about anybody that's been a head coach at a place 3 years or less. Or I'll even go 4 years or less.
I mean, I know it's not easy, but he is making it look kind of easy.
Yeah, and not only that, he delivers an attitude to it. His attitude has been simple, right? Jeff Goodman, who writes about basketball and has for a long time, is an Indiana grad. And during the summer, Jeff went in and he was talking to Kurt Cignetti. He says, hey, boy, if you could get off to a 4-1 start, that would be really great, blah, blah, blah. And Cignetti looked at him like, what are you talking about? He said, well, you get a 4-1 start. He goes, no, we're going to win them all. I mean, interesting, right?
And I bet Jeff at that point in his head was probably like, sure, coach.
Well, no, his point was, you know, I've lived this in my entire life. You've never had a 10-win season.
Yeah.
Never, right?
Yeah.
And because, and that's the interesting part about what they've done there. For example, say the rules were different in 2000. Geez, I'm trying to think what years he was there. 2007, maybe? 7, 8, 9? Rich Rodriguez was the head coach at Michigan. Maybe he was 8, 9, 10. Okay. I think he was 8, 9, 10. And Penn State beat him all 3 years. He made the move from West Virginia to Michigan. Now, that was the point where anybody who transferred had to sit out a year. There was not a grad transfer rule, things like that. It was, yeah, you had to sit out a year. If Pat White, who was his quarterback at that time at West Virginia, was allowed to transfer with Rodriguez to Michigan, it may have been a different story for Rich Rodriguez. Maybe. Maybe a different story for him at Michigan compared to how it turned out. Because he had to sit there with square peg round hole for a long time. Then he got Denard Robinson, and they still couldn't quite get it done. But it may have changed the transition for him and made it easier. Cignetti has 13 players on his roster that were with him at James Madison, and 12 of them are starters.
It gives you a real good head start on your culture.
It does, because now you're not trying to convert everybody in the room. They're all looking at you. That's why I felt from Mike Rhodes getting Ace Baldwin and Nick Kern from VCU in here helped set the tone for what the culture was like at VCU and how it needs to be here. And the I think I mean, that's something that you need to take a look at. In this recruiting world today, where you can change over. So let's get back to your original point. I'm going to say any coach that's been at a place 4 years or less, Cignetti's not helping them, nor is it his job to help them.
I'm sure this is probably an underreported part about it. In this day and age, you have to get your NIL people all on the same page with that too. And he obviously did to get a lot of those kids in there.
Right. Now, it really helped that he was able to get Curtis Rourke, who had been at Ohio University, and he played against Penn State, and I liked him. Jack and I were both like, hey, the quarterback can play. The rest of the guys around him were okay, but he could play. And you could just see it in not just in person, but in the videos and so forth. What they've done is amazing. Now, do you get fortunate with certain things? Sure you do. Okay? There's a reason why they have amassed a 10-0 record against, quote, the 102nd-ranked schedule in the country. But the bottom line is, you're also Indiana. So things in the non-con especially were scheduled in such a way to somehow get you 3 wins. Right? And he didn't schedule that part. He didn't schedule the non-conference schedule. That was done a couple of years ago. And I think that that what they've done is amazing. They deserve a lot of credit. They only have 2 games remaining in the regular season. They put themselves in an amazing position. An amazing position. And I'm happy for their fans. I am thrilled for Don Fisher, who's the play-by-play announcer for Indiana. Look, Don's done Indiana football for 52 seasons. And to have this happen at this stage of his career, a guy that, by the way, announced all 3 of Bob Knight's national championships. So on the basketball side, he's been there. He's done that. On the football side, this has not happened. I remember when they played at UCLA this year, I texted him the morning of the game because they were out there a couple weeks before we were. I texted him the morning of the game and I said, hey, Don. I said, you know what? And he said, enjoy going into the Rose Bowl. Enjoy the scenery. Enjoy everything about it. I'm thrilled you get a chance to finally do this. And he says, hey, Steve, it's not the granddaddy of them all today. He says, but for us, it's a granddaddy. Looking forward to it. All right? That's what he texted me back. Well, now to see this happen, they're 10-0. Not only are they 10-0, they put themselves in a position. And again, last night was the second snapshot of the season. Again, these are snapshots. Always remember that. That is the current snapshot of what they think. It is not the be-all, end-all ranking of what they think. And remember, it's a 1 through 25. It does not weight, okay, who conference champion. They don't predict conference champions.
I don't know. Having the third place team in the ACC as the one of the bye teams was pretty interesting.
Who was that?
Miami.
Oh, Miami, yeah.
SMU and Clemson are both in front of them in the standings.
Right, but that doesn't mean Miami can't be an at-large team.
As the third ACC team? If
sure.
They're not penalizing teams to get in? Nah.
They only have the 1 loss.
I know. I'm not arguing that point, but if everybody wins out, Miami's going to have 1 loss and not be in the ACC championship game.
Right. Well, I mean, Penn State wins out, they'd have 1 loss and wouldn't be in the Big Ten championship game.
I think we both know that I believe the Big Ten's a little deeper than the ACC.
Yes, there's no question it is. No question. I'm just making the point-counterpoint here.
Yes.
there's you're right, the ACC doesn't have the depth. Also, part of the Miami problem is they've lived the charm life.
That defense is going to cost them again, I think, this year.
Well, when I mean they've lived the charm life, a couple of calls they got.
Yeah.
Where you're like, what are we doing here? And I, you know, the end of the Virginia Tech game. That was obviously, I don't care what anybody in the ACC says, obviously a targeting call that was called. Where you're like, oh. And it wasn't called, and it kept kept them in the game. Right? And there was one other call they got. I think it was against Louisville. Yeah, I was watching a Louisville game. You're like, what are you doing? They've had three games this year where they've been the beneficiary of a call where I openly sat back and went, you have to be kidding me.
That stuff usually does even out in the end.
Well, Georgia Tech up front bludgeoned them this week.
Yes.
And by the way, I was thrilled. You saw Jordan Vandenberg recover the fumble. I was so thrilled for JJ. JJ's such a great kid. He was here. Great kid. Thrilled for him. Just thrilled for him that he made that play. So, but up front, Georgia Tech just took them apart. And I thought that was interesting, and Cam Ward could not overcome that, and Ward's right in the thick of the Heisman talk. I think as time goes, Travis Hunter, who's out there playing 100-some-odd plays a game, is getting closer and closer to it. We'll see. We'll see. It's amazing how things I cared about when I was younger, I don't care as much about anymore. The Heisman's one of them. Now, if a Penn State guy were to win it, I'd be thrilled beyond words. I mean, you know, that'd be personal. It'd be somebody I know. But if it's not, I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. That's great. Good. I'm happy for you. You know, hour-long ceremony, of which it only takes 2 minutes to actually name the winner. That includes walking up to the podium with the envelope. And they turn it into an hour show? Please, no. No. You have to be kidding.
It's also kind of turned into a quarterback award at this point as well.
Feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's why if Hunter were to win it, it would be completely different. You're talking about a wide receiver corner. And not a manufactured wide receiver corner like it was with, you know, and I say this with all due respect to an really great football player, Charles Woodson. But they ran some plays with him on offense to get him a little more Heisman juice, which, by the way, helped their offense. Hunter has been doing it every game for years now, like every game. Interesting. We'll take a break. Come back. More in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
So I sent the suit a text message yesterday about a couple things. And he texted me back and said he's sort of out of it right now. I'm sitting there like going, what's changed? What?
I don't have an answer for you.
That, of course you don't. Who could? My goodness. Love the guy. He is a terrific guy, so I want him to get better and get going here. Doesn't mean I can't have a little fun and kid with him. I was like, what changed? What's the difference? Oh, well. Yeah. Yeah. So, this is, again, last night was a snapshot. I always try to remind everybody when these things come out, it is a snapshot. That's all it is. It's not the be-all, end-all. It's not like a poll where you're up. Okay, in the end, you know, you need to keep winning. You need to keep winning. That's what it's all about. You need to stay in the one-loss pool. That's where Penn State is now. Getting into the two-loss pool draws with it opinion and scrutiny about, well, who they play, where they play them, how much do they win? And you know what I mean? All those questions, you're just trying, like, Haley, you keep winning. You just take care of your business. You're in great shape. You don't want to be in the three-loss pool because you're out. I have great respect for Heather Dinich, and she said, I'm not so sure three losses. No, I do. If you have three regular season losses, you're cooked. There are too many teams in the one- and two-loss area. It's the depth of teams of the one- and two-loss area that make a three-loss team be out of it. And that's where, for example, Georgia plays Tennessee this weekend. For Georgia, that is a game they have to win. If they don't win it, they're not going to the playoff. If they do win it, they're right back in the thick of it, and Tennessee would fall into the two-loss pool. That's the see, people love games with stakes. And what you're getting now on a weekly basis in the month of November are games with stakes. And that makes such a big difference, right, in terms of what the fan wants to see. It just gives you each game, you're sitting there going, okay, this game has meaning one way or the other. It's making the game more popular. Making the game way more popular, in my opinion.
Those playoff ratings are going to be nuts.
I think they're going to be incredible that weekend.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks, roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar, loved by my two personal favorites, I might add, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Is all at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Great to bring in Dave Spadaro. Dave, first of all, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
All right. So you can only play who's in front of you. And Philadelphia's playing people in front of them, and they are winning, which is terrific. When you look at style of play, do you like the style of play that's allowing them to win, or are there a couple things that they need to take care of once they get to something that might be perceived as a tougher opponent, like, say, even Washington this week?
I like going from -6 in turnover ratio to +1.
Yep, that's huge. That's gigantic. Yeah, that's huge.
I mean, right. I mean, that's kind of the whole story, right? Like, you don't give the football away and expect to win. When you win the turnover battle in the NFL, it is such an overwhelming piece of good statistical data. I like the way they're playing in the red zone. I like the balance on offense. The run game has been really dominant. And they've been, look, I get your question. And yeah. The real question is, are the Eagles for real? And is Thursday night the real test of how good they are?
Yeah.
Is kind of what you really want to say.
Well,
because
let me
they've
ask
beaten
you this.
Five lousy teams and in this five game win streak, and how much does that really mean? Well, I don't know. But I think Washington's very good. And I think the Eagles have beaten who's in front of them, and they've done a convincing job. And I think that this football team is also very good. So I don't think there's a lot of there's just not a lot of really great teams in the NFL. I think everybody's either really okay or lousy.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of the way it is.
I totally agree with that answer, because I've always said, hey, look, the NFL's not a beauty contest. It's about results. I don't care who's in front of you. Win five in a row, you win five in a row. Guess what? Those are wins. Bang, 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 bang. You go from there. You got to see Saquon Barkley twice a year in person. What's it like now for you to watch him every week?
It's an edge of your seat, what's next kind of experience. The guy's awesome. He is a complete back. And we were talking about it the other day. Is this small sample size enough to convince you that Saquon is the best running back that you've ever seen with the Eagles? And I really can't go that far because, I mean, since I've been with the Eagles, it's been like Herschel Walker and, you know, Brian Westbrook and Deuce Staley and Brian and LeSean McCoy and Miles Sanders and DeAndre Swift and blah, 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 blah. And like, but this guy is just, he does it in such spectacular fashion. He can also just wear you out, grind you down, and does it as a pass catcher too. And I really, really enjoy watching him play. I think he is. And the thing is, everybody knows that he's getting the football, and he still drags defenders along 3, 4, 5 yards. So he is every bit what I hoped he would be, and probably even more. I've been blessed to watch a lot of great Eagles running backs, and Saquon, in a matter of 9 games, has shown that he is right there among the very best.
Right. The backwards leap. So I'll tell you a quick story about that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. We're at practice. Penn State will practice on Sunday night. They take Monday off. So Kenny Sanders, who's in the recruiting department, comes over to us at practice. He says, hey, did you check out what Saquon did? So I was standing there with two of the team doctors, Wayne Sebastianelli and Greg Billy. And he says, let me show you on the phone. And you remember the first part of the run, Dave, is the spin move?
Oh, yeah, which was an incredible move in itself.
Right. And Dr. Greg Billy says, wow, what a move. And Kenny looks at me and says, wait.
Oh, that's a great story. Yeah, I mean, that was insane. I mean, that was just instinctive and powerful and explosive and otherworldly. And the fact that he didn't get just tattooed made it even better. But it was remarkable. And the guy is just everything. And I think what's so interesting about him, when he makes a mistake, you drop the pass against Atlanta, and you go, oh my God, he dropped it. Oh, Saquon Barkley just made a mistake.
Right.
And that's how good he is, because he's you just he doesn't he's so good that you've forgotten that he's human.
Has he made Jalen Hurts just by presence even a little bit better at quarterback?
I think so. I think that he has taken the pressure to do a lot off of Jalen's plate. I think when Jalen gets into trouble, he feels like he has to carry everything, and consequently you see him force throws or at times hold the ball too long or, you know, just throw the ball away, live for another play. You got Saquon Barkley back there. He made a play last week against Dallas, third and whatever it was, 8 or 9 or something. Swing pass out to the left side. He catches the ball around the 18, 19-yard line. And nobody talked about it, but he made his way, picked and bobbed and spun and powered and made his way down to the 1-yard line against, like, 5 defenders. And it's become routine for Saquon Barkley. And this was a remarkable play. And on the heels of the reverse leap, nobody attended to it.
Dave, you made a really interesting statement, which, by the way, I agree with, about there appear to be some good teams and then okay to lousy teams.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the,
really
you know
weird
the,
league.
Yeah, you know the league like the back of your hand. Why? Why has it turned out this way, in your opinion, just watching, and not just the, I mean, I'm talking about the other teams that you watch. Why?
I would probably point to quarterback play that has not taken, gone to the next level. Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, Deshaun Watson, Cleveland, Daniel Jones, New York, you know, no Dak Prescott, bad quarterback tandem, and Cooper Rush and Trey Lance. You know, there's just this league is so quarterback driven, and when you don't play, you don't play in the preseason. So the play through September is what preseason should be. So you're going to get uneven play there, and then there's just doesn't seem like there's a lot of great ones out there or a lot of good ones out there, and there's a lot of really crappy ones, and those teams I just mentioned have really bad quarterback situations. And I mean, the league is already struggling to score points. The defense, in a lot of ways, is caught up to the offense already. Witness the struggles the Eagles have with the brotherly shove, which they continue to go to, even though the margins have gone down a little bit. But the defense kind of caught up to what the Eagles are doing there.
Sure.
And I think defenses catch up to offenses inherently. That's why they keep changing the rules. And if you don't have really good quarterback play, you don't score points. And when you look team to team to team, there's not a lot of really good quarterback play. And that's why I think Washington has taken its big leap.
They believe
in Jaden Daniels. He's been outstanding with his decision making, his poise, his athletic ability, his accuracy. They've gotten a bit of luck with the Hail Mary, etc. But they're riding the leadership of Jaden Daniels, and that just goes to show what a quarterback does for an NFL team, and it's just not been consistent across the board.
Yeah, there are three things I came to, Dave, and tell me if I'm off base on any of them. Number one, the prevalence on cover two. Number two, the inability of quality quarterbacks that can be cover two. And number three, the inability of offensive lines to protect quarterbacks that would give them a better shot at beating cover two. Am I right or wrong on that?
My only argument is that they've been playing cover two for forever. Yeah. So it's not like the concepts have changed defensively.
Yeah, good point.
I do think the offensive lines are not as good as they used to be. There are a lot of injuries. I mean, the Eagles are blessed to have depth and have, over the years, just consistently addressed offensive line. It's interesting. Like, this is like such a small nugget of nothing that nobody cares about. But, you know, depth coming into the season for the O-line for the Eagles was like, wow, boy, who are these guys? And when they were able to get back Jack Driscoll, who went to Miami in free agency, didn't make it down there, like, Jeff Stoutland was so happy that he got somebody back that can play multiple positions, that he can plug in, that knows what he wants. It was just such a, and he hasn't really played that much, and he hasn't made a huge, you know, investment in the team or contribution to the team, but it was just an indication to me, like, wow, is it that hard to find offensive linemen? Or a defensive lineman so good, or they're bringing such exotic blitz packages? But it could be the cover two. Why the cover two now, though, Steve, versus when Tampa Bay was winning Super Bowls with it, and it was you know, Derek Brooks, a linebacker, and a great secondary that they had.
Yeah, good points.
I don't know. I would go back to quarterback. I look at the Eagles, and when Jalen Hurts doesn't turn the ball over, this team beats anybody. When he turns the ball over, they're leading 7-6 late in the second quarter against an absolutely awful Dallas Cowboys team.
Right.
And so I kind of extrapolate that and project that to the rest of the league.
By the way, I know Dak Prescott, so I understand that as a preface to the question. But why is Dallas awful?
Oh, they're terrible. Well, Jerry hasn't invested in the team. I mean, how do you ignore the running back position as he has?
No question.
They've had some injuries on defense, and generally they have a pretty good defense. But even when their defense was healthy, it was like boom or bust the last few years. They've given up so many yards on the ground. The Dallas Cowboys show of shows where the circus is more important than the substance has, in my opinion, caught up to the Dallas Cowboys.
Good point. Dave, now I want to get to the defense. You talked about the plus six. We're not going to be a plus six unless a couple things happen. A, you're taking care of the ball, which you've addressed, but you're also taking the ball. What's made the Eagles' defense better, more effective, in your opinion?
For the first time, Steve, I've looked this up forever, they're getting these giant contributions from their draft class.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eric Allen back in 1988, I had an afro back then. I mean, my hair was like, I was like parted down the middle and like wings, like beautiful. Eric Allen came in and started as a rookie game one. Quinyon Mitchell did that this year. And then Cooper DeJean comes in and shores up a really, really large hole at nickel because Avante Maddox, who I love, was just getting overmatched. Mm-hmm. But Cooper DeJean is 6'1", 198, younger, faster, stronger, bigger, has done a great job at nickel cornerback. Start there. Add in some playmakers at linebacker that they haven't had. They've been interchanging their linebackers and just piecemealing it together. But now you've got a healthy N'Kobe Dean. You've got Zach Bond, the free agent find of the year, along with Saquon Barkley. That has allowed Vic Fangio to really settle in with his back seven, and then the front four can go after a little bit. So that to me, and again, I mean, this is why tomorrow night's so crucial. I give the defense a ton of credit, but I also acknowledge Deshaun Watson, Daniel Jones, just a litany of Joe Burrow, very good quarterback.
Yes,
and then you come back with Trevor Lawrence, who's just regressed tremendously, and then Sunday in Dallas. Now the Eagles are second and third in many defensive categories. It's unbelievable. So tomorrow night is so critical for the defense.
Yeah, no question about that.
These rookies, Steve, these rookies are the real deal. Mitchell and Cooper DeJean are the real deal, and you will hear down the line from Jalix Hunt and Will Shipley and all these. Johnny Wilson catches his first touchdown pass. This draft class has been really, really good.
I mean, look, the DeJean, I thought, would translate really well to the NFL because, Dave, I had the advantage of seeing him on an every-year basis playing against Penn State. And the guy, you know, I just looked at him and said, that guy is an NFL player. Whoever gets him is going to get a gem. Mitchell I never saw. So now you see him, and when I watched him on TV, I said, man, for a kid, he's a lockdown guy. Just opinion watching from afar. Eyes on sight are better. When you watch him play on sight, you know, what are you seeing that makes him somebody that could be a long, long-term shutdown guy in this league?
You know, he doesn't cheat his eyes. He's not greedy. What I mean by that, he's not shooting his eyes into the quarterback, into the backfield, to try to find a little cheat to go get an interception. He sticks with his assignment. He's very, very good on his technique. He takes direction from the veteran cornerback Darius Slay, for example, that really have helped him a lot. He's a sponge, and he's a humble kid. He doesn't talk at all except when he's on the field, and he just goes out and does his job. He's athletic enough to run with everybody. He's big and strong enough to mix it up. Not afraid to lend a hand in supporting the run. So the one game where he really kind of got picked on a little bit was the Atlanta game, that last drive. They kind of went after Mitchell, and they scored the touchdown. They beat the Eagles. Abject depression. He really has come a long way since then, learned from that. And his recovery speed on deep balls is a thing of beauty. I mean, you know, they have tested him deep, and he has been right on it and using that arm bar expertly, that little veteran move to lock up the receiver's arms. I mean, it's impressive stuff. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to see what he does when he gets the first interception, see what he does with football in his hands. But this moment has not been too big for him, which is pretty amazing for a kid from Toledo playing in his rookie season.
Yeah, well, he may have to wait for that first interception because you actually have to throw the ball at him. I'd be hesitant to throw it over there against him, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think he's playing that well. You know, I have to ask another sidebar question. That's about the officiating, which gets a lot of scrutiny along the way. It feels like, and it's only a perception, but it feels like every third play there's a flag down on the play, something like that. Is that a product of guys not playing in the preseason where they can establish the ground rules then? Or is it just a product of maybe not enough officials who have a feel for the game? Or just the fact that guys are just out there making a ton of mistakes? What is it, in your opinion?
I would have to look at the raw numbers, the real data, and see if, in fact, there are more flags per game. I don't know that answer. Because, as you say, it's a perception. It does feel that way a lot of times. It really is disruptive. I think we've probably had this conversation in the past. I mean, I feel like I always feel that way about officials.
Sorry,
I don't like
that.
Officials being involved in the game of football at all.
Right.
So it's a hard question to answer. It certainly feels that way, but I probably would argue that it felt that way in years past.
That's fair. No, that's a fair answer. I understand that. How do you feel on this team in this moment? Nick Sirianni's been with this team.
really, on the battlefield, still standing tall, being surrounded by those who are ready to attack, labeled as the lame duck at the beginning of the season, the coach on the hot seat, the one who's, that guy I don't trust, Nick Sirianni, what is he doing making all these third and fourth down calls? And he's going to cost the Eagles games. And I hear all that, and yet, they're 7-2 mm-hmm. in first place in the NFC East, home game against Washington tomorrow. The players play hard for him. 2-2, he kind of loses it a little bit, shaves his head. People wondering what the heck's going on with Nick Sirianni. The players rallied around the head coach.
Right.
And all I read about in the NFL and hear is that this team's not doing well and that coach is going to get fired and, whoops, there goes the offensive coordinator or that quarterback's getting benched or, well, that doesn't happen in Philly. And all the Eagles keep doing is winning. And they came into the season very aware that they had collapsed like a deck of cards last year after a 10-1 start. And by golly, they're 7-2 and surging, and only the Kansas City Chiefs are hotter than the Philadelphia Eagles. And that credit goes to Nick Sirianni. And I think that having lived in the days of Buddy Ryan, when Buddy Ryan was the lightning rod for the football team, the willing lightning rod, took all the pressure off the players in a way that's kind of happened here. And Nick has become the lightning rod and gladly doing it. And here the Eagles are with a big game nationally televised on Thursday night. And a win would give them a two-game lead in the loss column in the NFC East with seven to go. And that's, and they've changed their style of play.
Yeah.
They've made adjustments. He lets his coaches do their job. He lets his players thrive. You don't hear people complaining about Nick Sirianni ever. And So I think Nick Sirianni's done a very, very, very impressive job in his three-plus seasons here with the Philadelphia Eagles. The track record, the wins and losses, which is all that matters, speaks the case for him.
32 fan bases. Probably only Kansas City and Detroit right now would be happier. How about that?
You know? Not a bad way of putting it. Maybe Buffalo. Maybe Buffalo. Yeah,
Buffalo would be thrilled, too. I think because they weren't sure with the wide receivers, so they've got to be thrilled where they are, too.
And I got to believe, and what makes this so great, I believe Washington, they're winning for the first time, and they're feeling great. And this is a big game, and Washington is for real, and Jaden Daniels is a star in the making.
Yep.
And you wonder if Chicago's feeling Sam Bowie, Michael Jordan-esque. A little bit right now.
Listen to you going back in the 1984 NBA draft way back machine. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, why not? I mean, wouldn't you be feeling that a little bit if you were a Bears fan right now?
Absolutely. Dave, total pleasure as always. Thanks so much. I always enjoy the talks.
Let me ask you this, Steve. How real are the Nittany Lions?
Good. Good, and then they're deep. And the reason you can get through a season like this is you have depth. And because they have depth, when they've had guys go down like a K.J. Winston or in a game where Drew Aller got hurt, they had somebody that could step up and play. And I think that's made a big difference when you're trying to navigate a schedule this long. And you know that, seeing the Eagles all the time.
Yeah.
If they didn't have certain guys step up when they needed them in a long season in a physical sport, that's the only way you can get to a good record.
Next time you play Ohio State, take care of Chip Kelly for me, please.
I will.
Knock him off the perch.
I hear you. Dave,
thanks,
Dave. Thanks, buddy. Dave Spadaro joining us this half hour, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is going to make this a November to remember. Sunbury Motors Hyundai received 10 truckloads of new Hyundais, and we need to make room now. Choose from over 55 brand new Hyundai Tucson's with savings over $6,500. Sunbury Motors has the full-size SUV Hyundai Santa Fe discounted up to an unbelievable $6,197 off. Both the Tucson and Santa Fe have financing as low as 0% for 48 months and 1.99% for 60 months. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000-mile powertrain. If you want to have a fun day, why not buy a Santa Cruz Hyundai? This nimble pickup starts at $31,340. The Santa Cruz is discounted up to $49,50 with 23 available. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is going to save you the most money all year now. 10 truckloads of new Hyundais will make this month a November to remember with your next Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.